We love technology. You wouldn't be listening to us without it. We wouldn't have jobs without it. We use 21st century technology to wake up, to drive, to eat, to pass the time. But it's kind of terrible, too. Our kids spend way too much time on their phones. We spend way too much time on our phones. Technology told us that it would make our lives easier, but in a lot of respects, it makes them harder. Even though tech promised to bring us all together, it's helped drive us apart. Hi, I'm Paul Acey, filling in for Adam Holtz, and today, as we continue to sail through our new book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, which of course you can buy right now, we dock at one of the biggest pain points that families have, technology. And we're lucky to have some amazing tech experts here with us today. Emily Chow spearheads Plugged In's tech coverage, including her ongoing monthly Tech Trends blog on Focus on the Family's parenting website. Jonathan McKee's latest book, Parenting Generation Screen, brings to bear decades of his experience in this area. Decades. Kristen Smith has helped us and plenty of other clients navigate the often bewildering world of social media. And then there's me, who still is a little uncertain about the whole GIF-JIF thing. And later, we'll bring Adam on stage and listen to him talk with Joel and Luke Smallbone, otherwise known as the Christian musical duo for King and Country. They'll talk about music and movies, including their own upcoming film, Unsung Hero, based on their family's own remarkable story. Clearly, we've got a full slate here, so let's get going. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
So we'll obviously be talking about some of the dangers of technology today, but it can be pretty cool too. So my question is simple. Tell me about one bit of modern technology, stuff invented or popularized in the last 10 years or so, that you think is flat out awesome.
Okay, I want to go first. All right, listen. What I'm about to say is going to take my cool card and throw it so far away if I even ever had one. Not until I had kids did I desire this.
Let me just say, you're in good company with the cool car.
Thanks, kid. Okay, I have a Honda Pilot right now, okay? I have to open the doors for all my kids and hope that if they get to the door first, they don't bang the Lexus next to us that I can't afford, right? I've never wanted a minivan in my whole life till I had kids. The doors slide open.
Oh, I know.
And I had a cooler answer in my head before, you know, we started talking about all this. And I was going to say, haha, the new Toyota Highlander. But you still have to open the doors. And so I think I'm just going to have to go with the cool fact that minivan doors slide open. And all of my kids can get themselves in the car.
You know,
what a miracle.
Minivans are seriously, seriously underrated. When we owned a minivan, honestly.
Did you love it?
I loved it.
And I told my husband, I have to have at least like a surfboard on top at all times to make it look like I'm doing something athletic, even when I'm not. And then I think I'd be fine. So anyway.
Okay. So as somebody who grew up riding around in a minivan, I can say that as a child, I did not appreciate it. But as an adult, I don't even have kids.
Right?
Dude, I don't even have kids. And I'm just like, no, I could go for a minivan.
That's awesome.
Oh, man. I just love being able to carry lumber in it. It was just so cool. Oh, anyway.
Not in a truck.
Awesome.
I never had a truck, but a minivan, lumber. I thought I can get big old 8-foot pieces of lumber. It was fantastic.
Right? Yeah.
I felt manly.
Yeah. That's awesome.
In your minivan.
Jonathan?
Hey, I'll chime in. Y'all know that I'm not even much of a fan of social media and stuff, but let's not let that mislead you that I'm not a fan of technology. Because man, I tell you, when I was in high school, if I could have like somehow peeked into the future and saw what I do now, I mean, I don't even understand. I wouldn't have dreamed that. I mean, last weekend, I'm skiing down a hill. And I've got my AirPods in, and I've got a ski hat on. You can't even see my AirPods. When I was a teenager, I would have been like, that would have been so cool for teachers. They would have never seen my AirPods. But, you know, no wires hanging out. But I've got my AirPods in. I'm skiing down a hill, and my daughter calls me through my watch. I mean, Dick Tracy's jealous here, you know? And I'm literally like, you know, Siri, answer, you know? And I answer. And I talk to her, and then when we're done talking, my music kicks back on as I'm going down the hill. And then when I get on the ski lift, I take the video that I shot of my wife going down the hill, and I email it to my daughter. You know, actually, I texted it to both my daughters real quick, and they immediately are pinging back, and I'm hearing it in my ears, and I'm talking with them as I go down the hill again. I mean, who'd have even thought this?
That
I could
so
choose
fun.
The music I want, that I could shoot pictures, all this. Forget social media. You don't need social media. It's pretty cool for communicating with the ones you love, listen to music you want to hear, all hands-free.
Jonathan,
sign me up.
You are like a commercial.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You are the commercial to sell this stuff. That works.
That's right.
So well.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. I'm going to sort of cheat and give two pieces of technology.
Oh. Do it.
So.
Pulling a Paul.
That's right.
I'm pulling a Paul. So I think my favorite thing is actually something that I got recently. And I am not a morning person, you guys. Like, every time that we come in to record, if it's earlier in the morning, I'm just like, oh, I am not mentally awake. Like, it takes me a good 3 hours to get fully awake.
Thank you for being here with us today.
Totally. It is not my nature to be a morning person. I have tried so hard, and it just does not work for me. But I discovered recently they have these sunrise lamps. And it basically, what it does is it goes from, like, completely, you know, dark, it's turned off, to, like, it slowly, just gradually gets brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter. It simulates a sunrise.
Wow.
And so, like, when it first starts, it's like a really dim reddish light. But as it gets brighter and brighter, it turns into kind of a white light, like a warm white light. And so it looks like but it wakes you up.
Interesting.
And it wakes you up, like, gently and naturally. Yeah, no, seriously.
Yeah.
Like, because, like, my biggest issue with alarm clocks over the years is that it shocks me awake.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That is
it's
actually,
a terrible feeling.
It's actually worse for me because it's like, okay, I didn't gradually
instant
wake up.
Instant anger.
Yeah, instant anger. Exactly. But you know what solves instant anger? Instant coffee.
There you go.
And there's my second piece.
There you go.
There you go.
I am a big fan of all those single cup coffee makers. I'm not going to name any specific brands because there's many, but yeah, no. I love my morning cup of coffee.
Ma'am, maybe we could have a podcast one time about coffee. But anyway, this isn't the time.
I'd be here for that.
Yeah.
That is awesome. I had actually never heard of one of those sunrise lamps.
It's amazing.
Oh, my goodness.
And it's got a sun feature, too. So at night, when I'm sitting there reading, I read by the light, and it slowly dims, and I fall asleep, like, before it even gets down to zero. I'm asleep.
Wow.
So do you actually read books, or do you read on your phone?
I read books. No, the phone would be counterintuitive
exactly.
It's its own light. No,
yeah.
I read an actual book so that as the light dims, my eyes actually get sleepier.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. All right, so I am going to mention something that I was actually talking with my mom about. You know, my mom is older than me, obviously, and she has
thank you for that clarification.
A lot of elderly friends. And she was talking about how one of them had just gone in for knee surgery, which, you know, if anybody who's had knee surgery, it's a big deal, right?
Right, right.
Except that they apparently did a 3D printer on this guy's knee. So instead of throwing in a whole bunch of, you know, metal plates and whatever they do with that, they actually measured his knee, completely printed it off the way it should be, slapped it in his leg, and 2 days later, he was walking around with a cane.
That's awesome.
It was incredible. 3D printing, that is cool.
They use that a lot in medical procedures for, like, prosthetic limbs and stuff now, so that it's actually more custom to the person that it's being fitted to. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. It's just amazing sometimes what technology allows us to do. And I totally resonate with what you were talking about, Jonathan. Even though my watch is kind of annoying sometimes when it speaks to me, it is really cool to be running along and you can turn off your music on your watch. You can look at your text. You know, my son might send me a text while I'm running. It's pretty great.
It is pretty great.
So
that's cool.
But we are not here to talk about the greatness of technology.
I was just thinking that. So let's talk about the cons.
We are here to talk about the dangers of technology. So let's talk a little bit about, clearly technology is very cool. It's one of the reasons why teens spend, 7.5 hours a day on screens? That's a lot of screen time. But clearly that's a problem too. I mean, I think most parents would say that's a problem.
It definitely is. Like this, I don't know the statistic off the top of my head, but the amount of adults who spend, you know, 7+ hours on their phone is not that much further behind teenagers.
Well, and that's a really good point that I think we want to hammer home is that this is not just a kid problem.
No,
this is,
it's an everyone problem.
This is an everyone problem. So let me ask you, just let me throw this out to you guys. What is the biggest problem with that kind of screen time? Is it the amount of screen time, or is it what kids, teens, we do with that screen time?
I think, combo.
Yeah, I think part of extended time on screens just creates a disconnection.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So I think one thing my husband and I have noticed, even just in coming home at the end of the day, whether you have to catch up on email, and then of course if you're on email, you might get distracted by something else, YouTube, whatever it looks like. You're just so easily disconnecting from like reality, mm-hmm. from what needs to be done. Like there are little kids everywhere, whatever that looks like. And so you're immersed in this other thing. And the other thing isn't necessarily bad. It's just that having disciplines and routine set in place so that you're able to be present is far better. Mm. And so I think when you're, you know, you have that long period of time, it's like an escapism. And so learning to balance that, I think, is really important.
I think that, you know, yes, it disconnects us from what's immediately around us. But the argument that I think especially teenagers would make is, but I'm talking to my friends. And it's like, but even there, there's a disconnection because having an interaction via text message, there's so many nuances that go into face-to-face reactions that when you're sitting there constantly texting people and that is your primary form of communication with them, or even just... honestly, even just a secondary form, if you are using that to communicate with them all the time, it does change the way your relationship is. And it does change the way that when you are face-to-face that you interact with each other because you've gotten so used to texting.
Yeah, that's true.
I think that's really true. That's a really, really good point because when you are texting, and I text a ton, right? But when you are texting, you miss out on so many, you know, visual cues that you get when you're talking with someone face to face. It's not really a relationship. It becomes much more matter of fact, like you're trying to engage to get some information.
Well,
you look like you disagree, Kristen.
Well, I before we throw it all under the bus,
yeah,
I would say that I really appreciate it. And I understand that the point with whatever teenagers, if
sure,
you know, that's all the interaction they're getting. But I appreciate it because for the people that I can't connect with face to face, I have that option. Now, I would say the vast majority of teens are probably not only texting, right? This is Snapchat. This is TikTok. This is other forms of like short form entertainment that's shortening my attention span. And so I think this is kind of where our conversation probably will lead, right? Like what this is doing to the rewiring of our brains, including adults. Mm-hmm. But let's be careful with all the negative. Because I mean, there is a lot of positive.
There is a lot of positive. And, and like I say, I text a lot.
Right.
But it does change how we communicate
totally.
With each other.
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's funny. I always use the car analogy. It's like, somebody could sit there and say, oh my goodness, cars are terrible. I mean, drinking and driving, and they're used as getaway vehicles when people rob banks. I mean, you know, kids are being killed in accidents. It's literally one of the top leading causes of death in teenagers. You know, but you don't hear a lot of people saying we should ban cars.
Yeah. Right.
Let's get rid of cars altogether. You know, cars are evil. It's pretty obvious, and maybe it's because they've been around so long. Literally, we've had a century of kind of figuring out, oh, you know what? One thing that would be really cool is we shouldn't let people drive as fast as they want. Maybe we should have some limits
like
there.
Yeah.
Or oh wow, I mean, and literally probably 50 years ago, and sadly it was decades before they realized, oh, you know what? We should make some like strappy thingies that hold us in, so that like if we hit a tree or another one of these fast going vehicles, it stops us from going through this new piece of glass we have created here to keep the wind out of our eyes.
I'm I'm so grateful for those strappy thingies.
Yeah, those strappy things are awesome. And then it literally was just a few decades ago. I mean, it was probably, I mean, getting towards the 100-year mark before we realized, hey, you know what? We shouldn't have young people just piling in these things, you know, running the radio, and they've got like, you know, five teenagers yelling at each other all the same time. Maybe we should have limits on not only when teenagers actually get in these vehicles, but how many of their friends are allowed to have distracting them, because honestly, they don't know how to use them yet. So let's create some laws. I mean, and all this has come about, and it took us 100 years.
Yeah.
And here we are now, and we've had, you know, these phones in our pockets for pretty much a decade. Yeah. That's about it. A decade and change. And we're just now starting to think about legislation of, hey, you know what? It's kind of crazy, but we're just handing our kids these devices with no guidance whatsoever. And a lot of parents are like, you know more about this than we do, so here, figure it out and, you know, tell me about how to use it. And honestly, it's not the device that's so bad. The device can do a lot of good. We just, I think we're a little too quick to not only adopt it, but just hand it to our kids without any thoughts of repercussions. And maybe we need some strappy thingies.
That's good.
Strappy things.
Maybe we need some guidelines on, you know, when we should be using this and for how long. And that's what I think we need. I think that's the big picture.
That's solid.
Yeah. And it's a great transition to really talk about the chapter that Emily wrote in Becoming a Screen Savvy Family, which is on sale right now, if you wish to get it.
Nice plug.
Because we really do talk about sort of the equivalent of those strappy thingies. You know, we have some guidelines
parameters
that really talk about how you can sort of limit this stuff in your home, how you can sort of get this under control.
It's not even necessarily about always limiting. It's just about how it's being used. You know, you want to make sure that, you know, so the first question that people ask is like, when should I give my child a phone? And it's like, okay, well, there's a ton of different research on this. Everybody's going to give you a different answer. The fact of the matter is, there is no one size fits all for that answer. You know,
it's which is frustrating to hear.
It is frustrating, but it actually requires you. Sorry, kind of requires you to be a parent. You got to know who your kid is. You know, when I was growing up, like I had all sorts of different Nintendo devices. Like I would get like a new one every time they came out with a new thing because they would stop making games for the old ones, you know? So like that was like the thing that I always got. I don't even think I didn't have a cell phone until I was like 14 years old, and it was one of the old dumb phones, you know? It couldn't even get on the internet. But one thing that I remember is that when I got, you know, my little Nintendo device, my parents never looked at it. They never sat there and said, okay, let's take a look at this and see what's going on, make sure this is safe. And part of that was because they knew me. They knew they could trust me. I was kind of a goody two-shoes. I'm not ashamed to say that. It protected me from a lot of things. But, you know, so it's like, you know, if you've got the kid who's going to sit there and use the device as it was intended to be used, and they're going to use it responsibly and safely, then maybe the only thing you have to do is like, oh, hey, Emily, you didn't do your chores? Okay, give me the DS. You're grounded. And that was 100% something that my parents did when I was a kid. And I actually think I mentioned that in the chapter, you know. And so that was a matter of like, okay, we're not going to limit how much you can use it. But if it starts taking away from your responsibilities, then we're going to take it away as a punishment. And you're going to learn a lesson about, hey, you can't spend 5 hours playing video games and not do your chores and not do your homework and not, you know, come eat dinner with the family.
The only difference, I think, though, with the phone is that I think there have been, I've talked to a couple parents, and that is what they say. I know my child, right? Like, I trust my child. And then you're seeing a lot of negative happen, even when they thought they knew their child, because truly of the dangers of social media, right? I mean, like, I was just advocating for not only the cons, but let's talk about the cons. Because you have this open world. You have this child who, no matter how good your kid is, we all want attention or to be loved, or especially in our teenagers as we're figuring ourselves out, right? And let's say you find that in someone else online who's giving that thing to you. And I think the slope can be pretty slippery, even if your child doesn't intend for that. Their brains are not fully developed or formed. And so 100% to Jonathan's point, the parameters saying like you need to have those boundaries in place no matter the child, because they're learning discernment.
Well, that brings up my next point, which is parental controls. Like, I know that, you know, it's one of those things where people are like, but they don't work. No, they're not a, you know, end-all be-all, but they do help. And there are certain different programs and apps that you can download that will help you to monitor your child's online activity so that you can see, oh, this is a new person that my child is talking to. Who is this person? You know, and you can do a little investigating. And it's again, this is like a really hot topic because people are like, okay, but isn't that invading their privacy? And it's like, to a certain extent, maybe, but to another extent, we have to protect our kids. And a lot of experts do say that you should be using some sort of surveillance technology on your child's cell phone.
You know, and it's funny, on that debate, I get asked that question all the time from parents, you know, which one of these, you know, systems should I buy to track my kid through Walmart so I can see what aisle he's in and if he's going to buy that candy bar or not? And so, I just answer honestly that, you know, I'm not a big fan of that. I think the repercussions of parents becoming, you know, big brother, I think sometimes it really hurts the relationship. Now, immediately people are thinking, see, he's saying let his kids do anything they want. No, no, no. As a matter of fact, in my parent workshops, I'm so very clear. You know, we live in a world where pretty much 8 out of 10 young people bring their devices into their bedroom every night and have them there throughout the night.
Yeah.
80%, you know, it's actually 79%. But the thing that's so fascinating is I'm a big advocate of saying no.
Yeah.
No. And there, here's a nice parental control where you don't even have to go buy something. You just simply sit there and say, hey, we're not going to have devices in the bedroom. And that even takes a little bit, you know, of work because you don't realize that your kid, you know, grabbed that old, you know, I literally have an old iPhone in my drawer. I saw the other day when I was cleaning out a drawer, I was looking for a cord. I'm like, oh, I forgot about that guy. That was like iPhone 3 iPhones ago, right? And it actually works, but it's not, it doesn't have a service.
Yeah.
Well, I've heard so many stories of kids grabbing those because they're a tablet.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
they
you can
still
hook them
work.
Up to Wi-Fi
you,
still.
Yeah, you could power them up. And so they keep that under the mattress and, oh, mom, here's my phone. And then they pull that one out. And that, so it is, it's tricky, but that alone, having simple controls of like, hey, we're not going to, and talking about as a family, hey, let's, as a family, really turn the tech down at 8 at night or whatever. Let's read. Let's do some other things and kind of, and owning something. That's such a great parental control. Another great parental control, by the way, is just having a password set before they download another app.
Yeah,
so if your kid decides that they want to download something, you know, you talk about it first.
Yeah.
You know, so it takes ongoing conversations to talk about this stuff. And that's why we appreciate all you listeners who are here listening to this show with us because we're dialoguing about this stuff. Hopefully this is giving you some subject matter to talk with your kids about because it's an ongoing conversation, which I think is so much more important than parental controls, which, by the way, I just recommended.
Yeah.
Well, and honestly, that's something that was like the last point. Like I'm going through all these different points in the chapter about like, hey, here's where you can start, but where it ends is you have to keep having those conversations. But another thing that you brought up that is also in the book is you need to demonstrate this behavior. You know, it's not just about telling your kid what to do. It's about showing them what to do with your own habits. Because if you are on your phone 10 hours a day, why should your kid do any different? If you are taking your phone into your bedroom at night, why should your kid not do that? Well, I'm using it as an alarm. Get an alarm clock. Like, they're really inexpensive. They're a lot less expensive than a phone, I'll tell you that. Like, but seriously, you can get a really cheap alarm clock that gets the job done every single day. They have backup batteries so that if your power goes out in the middle of the night, the alarm clock will still go off in the morning. Like, you know, you just gotta, you have to sit there and demonstrate this to them and talk to them about, hey, here's why I do this. It's because of this study that says if I'm on social media for 10 hours a day, I'm going to get depressed, you know?
I think those are good points. But I kind of view this as a parent, I can watch, let's say, a PG-13 movie that I'm not going to let my kid watch because of their age, right? Because of whatever's going on with the material. In the same way, I can use my phone differently than my child. But I do agree, of course, if I'm on this thing 24/7, if I'm not connecting with them. Now, primarily, I do like to use this. This is work. Like, I mean, everything is on this thing. And could I buy a different alarm clock? Sure. Will I? I don't know. I mean, really, like, maybe I should have one.
I love
just
your
immediately
honesty.
Negating awesome. Everything I just said.
No, no. No, I'm
teasing
you.
This is a pretty good alarm clock. I mean, I can set backups.
It's a great alarm clock, and I have
it
all the features.
It updates with daylight savings. I mean, it's awesome.
Even if I don't agree with daylight savings. Anyway, I have this phone that I can plug in that I think the thing is technology creates this convenience. Mm-hmm. Parenting is a lot. All the responsibilities is a lot. This is like a very easy form to just say it's plugged in. Would it be better for me to have it somewhere else with an alarm clock? 100% probably. Yeah. But I don't. And so I think it's hard to only do that when, like, to speak of the ideals, mm-hmm. when we have to also talk about the reality. And to your point, though, about connection, the other day, my son, he got in trouble for something. And I was so done. I was just so done parenting. Okay, we're in the middle of a move. I'm trying to pack stuff. I was not trying to listen to anything he had to say. I was furious that he was disobeying, honestly. And I kind of went off. And at the end of me doing that, he like looked around the corner. He's like, "You didn't even have to listen to what I had to say." And of course, it was just him like refuting his point again. But I was like, okay, you're right. I'm not really listening to you. And so I stepped back and I was like, let's talk about this. And it made me think in this same scenario, right? Like, to have this conversation, he is a human. Like, he's his own human. And as they get older, and I wouldn't know. So Jonathan, Paul, you guys step in here. Like, it's important to make those connections and really talk to them because they are their own people. And I want him to feel like he's his own person.
Yep. And I think as we sort of bring this conversation to a close, one of the things that I'm getting a few different points here, right? And one of them is to really, to your point, Emily, you have to know your kids.
Yeah.
You have to know yourself. You have to know what those weaknesses are. But we also have to know that sometimes we have blind spots.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so sometimes you need to have some tools in place to curb your kids, your teens' habits. You need to curb your own habits sometimes.
Yeah, that's good.
And number three, the last point that you had in your chapter and the one that we talk all the time about here is how important it is to dialogue with your kids. You know, to really engage with them in conversations. Because these are really difficult conversations, right?
Sure,
if you have a 12-year-old that you're trying to rein in a little bit on their screen time, those can be World War III conversations,
right? Well, because
right?
every teenager and tween thinks they know everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's true. So you just have to really keep those lines of dialogue open. There's a lot of really great tools. I think parental tools can, you know, controls can be one of those. And we just have to be mindful of utilizing those tools when they're appropriate. But the number one tool at our disposal is really conversation.
Yeah.
It's all about relationship, right?
And you can read more about all of these things and more in our book, Becoming a Screen Savvy Family.
That was good.
That was very good. So clearly, technology is a massive issue for most families. It's an important issue for all of us, whether we have kids or not. We do our best at Plugged In to keep abreast of all the latest digital trends and offer some rock-solid, scripturally grounded advice, but we can't do it without you. We're able to do what we do and provide it for free because of your generous donations. So if you feel so led, send us a gift. We won't spend it on anything frivolous, we promise. And we'll let you know how to do that in our episode notes on the Plugged In Show homepage.
Today, we have a special treat. We have Joel and Luke Smallbone of For King and Country on the Plugged In Show. And we're actually here not to talk about their music.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly.
Shocker.
Thank you. Thank you. But we're going to be talking about a new movie coming out called Unsung Hero, which is really, I'm going to just say it. It's the origin story, right, of the Smallbone family.
Yeah, in many ways, Adam. Well, first of all, a real treat to be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
And this is Joel.
Yep. Just so you can decipher voices, this is Joel with the dulcet tones. And
and it's Luke over here with, I don't know what my tones are, but we'll just go with whatever happens.
All right.
So it is Luke and our brothers.
Yes.
Two of seven kids.
Yep.
These wonky accents are Australian. that have been sort of the edges have been chopped off by you Americans.
You've with a little bit of Nashville on the side.
G'day y'all kind of thing, you know, tied in there. And our parents migrated in the 90s, and this story is really their kind of origin story. It's really the kind of the house that built us in some ways.
Yeah.
And really circles around our eldest sister, Rebecca St. James, who is no stranger to folks.
I had the privilege of talking with her a couple weeks ago. Yeah. So we'll see if your story lines up with with yours.
This is actually an interrogation.
She was nice. Good. Oh, well,
she was lovely.
She was well behaved.
Yes, we had a great talk. So you've already started to answer my very first question, Joel. Every movie has a backstory. And obviously your family story is incredibly dramatic, but lots of families have dramatic stories. Not everybody's family ends up as the subject of a movie. How did that come about? Like, whose idea was it to say, hey, let's make a movie?
Well, as Joel kind of mentioned, coming from Australia, parents, my dad had a concert that was a concert promoter in Australia, and he lost everything on a tour back there and got a job offer in Nashville, Tennessee. And he thought it would be a good idea to move the six kids, you know, and another one on the way, which is a lot, right?
It's a lot. We have three, and it feels like enough.
That's right.
We're holding at three.
And once we arrive in Nashville, he loses that job. And so we're straight on the other side of the world, no friends, no family, sleeping on beds made out of clothes, no way for our little sister to be born in a hospital, no car. It was a very difficult time, you know, for our family. And I have shared semblance of that story at pretty much every performance that Fakir and Country's ever done. And it has always really responded to people. A lot of people coming up saying, hey, man, you guys should write a book. Mm-hmm. Joel and I were homeschooled. We don't read or write very well, so we don't do that.
To the homeschoolers.
So we thought, well, what if we make a movie instead? And I called up a producer friend of mine in LA and said, hey, man, I got this crazy idea, like this story I've told, and I just feel like there's something about it that maybe we should put it into development and just see where it goes. And at the end of the day, the heartbeat of the film is that I believe in the power of family. I think the family is more valuable today than it ever has been in the history of the world.
Yeah.
But we don't value it as such. Mm. And Mother Teresa has a great quote where she says, if you want to change the world, go home and love your family. And to me,
and that quote's even in the movie.
It's in the film. Yeah, that's how much we believe
in
it.
You made it to the end. I made it to the end, right?
You really did watch the movie.
I even watched the credits.
And that's really, at the end of the day, that's really the heartbeat behind the movie. I think we have to have films that display the power of family. There's a reason why family is so complicated.
Yeah.
Because it is that powerful.
Yeah.
And I hope that people will come to this film and watch the film and they'll say, what if I was to be a better father? What if I was to be a better mother? What if I could love my brother or my sister in a different way? What if I was to choose forgiveness?
Yeah.
You know, I think those are the things that we hope people are left with.
I think one of the things that impacted me, and I'll just share this and invite you guys to respond to it, your dad, David, who you play, Joel, and I want to circle back to
I've dubbed it a very expensive therapy session.
Exactly. He's a proud man in both maybe good and not so good ways. Like He is absolutely determined to do the right thing by, you know, providing for you guys.
Right.
But almost to the point where receiving help is hard. And then he kind of spirals, but there's this moment where he basically says, I've blown it. And I think for me as a dad, that might have been the shot, the scene that got me, because I think sometimes as dads, we can't get there for whatever reason.
Right?
And I loved that part of the movie. I'd love to just hear how that story arc came about. I mean, obviously, I'm guessing it's based on what really happened.
It is. Well, it's funny you even mentioned the word based. In that we toyed around with, you know, you've got inspired by a true story, based on a true story.
Yeah, kind of a true story.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're saying, right?
Yeah.
And we actually, I remember in 2020, as Luke mentioned, when we sat down to what we call break the story, you know, what is the story? And we sat down with the screenwriter, Richard Ramsey, and Dad was there, Mom was there. We were all at this table at the Hampton Inn with masks on in the middle of the pandemic. We're doing a drive-in show in like Ohio.
I think it was Iowa.
Yeah.
It's always Iowa.
It's always Iowa.
And you know what? I'm from Iowa, so I can crack
go.
That joke.
Yeah, there you go.
And we're sitting, well, thank you to Iowa for this. Then we're sitting around the round table and we just finished telling sort of our family story beat for beat. Mm. And I distinctly remember Richard looking at Dad, David, going, well, I'm so sorry that you had to walk through that.
Yeah.
And then he sort of turned to the rest of the table and was like, but what an incredible film this would make. And so we actually pulled out Inspired By or Based. It just is a true story because yeah. it's so close to reality. Dad said it to me after the fact, because obviously they've seen it now and they were a part of, you know, speaking into it at some level at least. And he said,
so you co-directed it?
I did. Luke produced it. I kind of oversaw it and I co-directed it and very indulgently co-screenwriter and then played dad in the film, like okay. you mentioned. We don't know how to do it any other way. Luke and I just get in the pit. But anyway, there was this sort of pivotal moment where dad even came to me and he said, hey, what, after we'd watched it the first time, he said, you externalized what I was feeling internally. Yeah. And I took that as a real compliment because that's part of what film is. But that scene you were referencing, which I won't spoil it for everyone, but it
right.
was the
I
one.
I won't spoil it any more than I've already
one
spoiled it.
The one scene in the entire film that we actually shot twice.
Mm.
Because I did it the first time and I think did what most dads do. Mm-hmm. For the listener, you'll know when we're talking about it. It's basically, it's an apology scene of sorts.
Yeah.
And he checked the boxes and I'm sorry. And we actually had the editor sort of put a rough cut and we were like, this is not going to work.
Mm. And so did it not ring true?
No, it didn't.
Okay.
Because it was the faux apology, right?
Yeah.
And
it's like you're telling your kid that you have to go say sorry to the sibling.
Right. I'm sorry.
Yeah. No, I didn't mean to do it.
The teeth are clenched, right? Right.
And you interviewed our sister, Bex and James.
I did.
Her husband, Cubby, was the second unit director on the film.
Okay.
He's a musician, yep. Foster the People, turned filmmaker. And he pulled me aside right before the scene. And he offered a piece, which I won't betray his trust, but a piece of very personal information about that era that just broke me.
Wow.
And so what you see as you see the film in that moment is a genuine response to the words that he spoke. So I'm very thankful for that. And I'm thankful, this is a kind of redemption of family in some ways, to be able to re-image some of these things, not only for our family.
Yeah.
But for audiences around America, you know, and the world.
Well, and I think it's safe to say, even if you want to be a good dad, most of us blow it at some point, right? And maybe we blow it massively, and maybe it's not a life-wrecking thing, but it's hard to
you
circle back.
You project on your kids,
yeah.
you blow it, and, you know, you miss it.
Yep. Now, on the flip side, I'm going to spoil something a little bit. The unsung hero here is...
His mom.
Mother.
Is yeah. your mom.
Yeah.
And I think her tenacity, yeah. oh man, it just got me. And I'm looking you right in the eye. I'm not just saying that, right?
No, I believe you.
It got me. Talk a little bit about your mom's journey through this story and obviously yeah. IRL in real life too.
Yeah.
Like that.
Mom, to just frame her a little bit so the people listening can understand it. Mom used to say to me, and obviously said to all of us kids when we were kids, and this will tell you a little bit about who she is. She'd say, look, I'm not very concerned about who you are as a child when everything's going well, but I'm very concerned about how you behave when things are not going well for you. And if you were to sum up a little bit even who she is as a person, is my mom, I think, had practiced what it means to believe in Jesus, to have faith in Jesus for so many years, to come to this point where literally everything is trending in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
And she got to live out, oh, I'm living out what I've been teaching my kids. What does it look like when everything is going against what we're hoping to do, what we're hoping to achieve, what we feel like God's calling us to do, the decision, who are we going to be?
Right.
And at the end of the day, my mom passed that test. She passed it with a fierce love for God, a fierce love for her husband, which I think looking back, you know, especially in modern day, you could go, Mom, why were you so rock solid in that? You know, I think you could ask that question. Yeah. And then she fiercely loved us kids. Mm. And people have come up to us a lot and said—
And that comes through in the movie.
Yeah.
And it's so clear.
People have asked us a lot. It's like, hey, were those scary times? And I was like, no. We knew we were poor. We knew that we were struggling, but we were loved. And if you're loved going through incredibly difficult circumstances, a kid doesn't really seem to care that much.
Yeah.
Now, some of the older siblings may have slightly different memories of that, but us young kids, man, we were playing cricket inside,
yeah,
you know, having all sorts of learning new sports and learning, you know, in a new friend group and all that. There was a lot to really, there was a lot of fun.
So when you guys were putting the screenplay together, did you get everybody in the room and like compare memories to try to say, oh, it happened this way? Because you guys were pretty young,
right?
I mean, relatively speaking, right? When the events of this movie happened.
We had two things that were really helpful. One, we've actually been working on another a project, a documentary of sorts that's yet to be released. That well, there was a lot of interviews and sort of research done as part of that. And then the second ace up our sleeve is Richard L. Ramsey, who's a screenwriter, who I've okay. worked with on screenplays in the past. And, you know, if you're making a film about your family
yeah.
and you're producing it and directing it and you're playing your family.
Right. You might be
you
too close.
You need degrees. Yes. You need degrees of separation.
Right.
And Richard, he's kind of a history buff anyway. So he literally went methodically through each member. He sat down with someone for probably 3 or 4 hours.
So this is a movie that touches on so many family issues, and probably if you've listened this far, you get the picture on that. What do you hope families take away from this movie?
My hope is that, and this kind of is the you know goes back to the origination of even just the thought. I think that families are shaping, obviously, the next generations. How you do family has generational consequences. I mean, you guys are focused on the family. You
Man,
know
preach.
These things.
Preach.
You know these things.
Yeah.
I've not had seen a movie about a family like this.
No, I haven't
And
either.
That's the reason
and it's my
why,
job to watch them. So.
Yeah, and then right. that's the reason why we wanted to make it is because I want people to see that in a marriage they could say, well, what if we make this work?
Yeah.
Like, what's the fruit of me making this marriage work? So to me, to tell stories about families, our family, as you saw in the film, is not a perfect family by any
right.
means. But to see what, if people could start to say, I want to be a better dad. I want to be a better mom. How do I actually go about doing these things? And if we can get people to that point,
yeah,
I think that the mission has been accomplished. Because if you start becoming interested in how to be a better brother, how to be a better sister, yeah. mother, father, cousin,
even
coworker,
to Rebecca.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, even to Rebecca, and I will say I love Rebecca. I was sort of always Rebecca's right-hand man, and we have a lot of synergy. So
Joel's Rebecca's favorite.
And
let's
I also
right.
interrupted Rebecca's you just now, so forgive me.
No, I think, I mean, look, I think that that's, you know, that's the point, is my hope is people will start to see their families. I don't want this film to ever feel unrelatable.
Yeah.
People need to be able to go walk out of that theater and say, and if we have done this, I would be very, very pleased.
Yeah.
Why can't I implement that in my family?
Well, and I think one of the things that is relatable is you start off almost in like paradise, right? I mean, your family has this huge house and you've
it's
got
Australia.
A swimming pool and it's Australia. And it sort of feels like you've got it all made and then...
We'll call it the Australian dream.
Yeah, the Australian dream. I like that. You should, you know, trademark
coin that.
Yeah.
Well, you and, Americans should.
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's a good idea. And then it goes away because of circumstances. And right. really not because your dad made a mistake, but he was being a businessman and the business climate changed and the economy changed and he's, you know, collateral damage. And then we see right. you go from there to, I think when your family moves into the house, as a viewer, you've still got the palace in Australia in the back of your head. I'm like, oh, this is rough,
yeah.
you know? And then you find out Eddie DeGarmo's like your next door neighbor and
we're mowing lawns
and
you're raking
mowing yards,
leaves.
So.
I mean, this is not probably any, there's gotta be a lot of laws that we broke, but I learned how to mow lawns at 5 years old. And I got to use the push mower that was self-propelled
uh-huh.
because I genuinely wasn't strong enough
strong
to get it.
Enough
if,
to push
if,
it.
If the hill was this, I couldn't get it up there.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, I want to ask another question that takes things in a little bit different direction. At Plugged In, we talk about, we not only review movies, we review music, TV, different kinds of entertainment. You guys, I think it's safe to say, are primarily known as musicians. Mm-hmm. And so my question to you is, how is the art that you're creating in a movie, how do you think it works differently than the art you create when you're making music together?
Yeah. Music, it's funny now diving into movies after music. Because think about it, Adam. Like, music, you have to be all things to all people. Like,
yeah.
you are the writer.
Right.
You are the director. You are the producer. You are the marketer. Mm-hmm. You are the face of it. You're the actor. You're everything, you know?
And you're the person people connect with and identify
yeah.
with.
And so it was interesting. And we've always been a very theatrical band, mm-hmm. you know, kind of dubbed ourselves like the Australian version of a Cirque du Soleil show. And even our music videos have always been, we're either on a ship or flying through the air or in the salt flats of Utah, you know? And so we've always had that theatrical bent. But when it came time to do this movie, we sort of had that grit and gristle, all-encompassed approach to the movie. And I kind of loved it.
Yeah.
I love that we got into the nooks and crannies of the script and that, you know, Luke's behind the camera and I'm behind the camera, jumping in front of the camera, and we're marketing it. We're talking to you about it. And so I think that served us really well. I will say this, though. Man, movies make music creation look like child's play.
Yeah. Say more about that. I'm curious about that.
You know, music, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars to maybe put a record out. Movies, it's multi-millions.
Yeah.
Tens of millions, you know. Music, you have your label and you have your band. Movies, you have Lionsgate and Kingdom Story Company yeah. and your
villages.
Band. You got yeah. That's a good way to put it. If in music you have sort of one household that you sort of create everything and you put out into the world,
yeah.
you create a village of people in production, post-production, marketing. And so it's just been incredibly eye-opening, and it's actually going to be fascinating to take it back into the next record when that time comes to go, man, we've just learned so much
yeah.
from making this film just on a ground level that I feel like we've learned. Yeah, we can take so much of this and implement it into music again when right it comes on. Back around.
So last question. I know I said that was the last one, but one
no,
more.
I like it.
How can people support this movie, which in some ways it's kind of a basic question, but it might be more complicated than people realize?
Oh yeah, no, it's a great question.
Well, I mean, look, you in music you have 2 years to make an album work. In film you have 72 hours.
Yeah, first weekend.
It's the first week and the first weekend. It's just, and so it becomes a, help us out if you can't go see it, but we don't want you just to lackadaisically go see it. Mm-hmm. It's been one of those things that we've realized that it's one thing for someone to go see it. We want everybody to go see it. But if you do go see it, how you spread the word on that, how is this? I mean, what's amazing nowadays is social media is just so powerful in how we can share things that we love.
Yeah.
It obviously has turned into also the things that we don't love as well.
Right, right.
But, you know, there's a lot of ways of just getting involved with you know, whether or not it's coming to the film, whether or not it's buying out a theater. You know, most of the time, buying out a theater isn't really that much. People think yeah. of it as like, this is crazy
thousands
thing.
Thousands and thousands
it's not,
and thousands of dollars.
You know, and so
a few hundred.
Bringing along people, bringing along friends, but at the same time, being our ambassadors, being people that we hope, obviously we're here at Focus on the Family, but we yep, believe yeah. in the power of family, not because we're here. This
right.
film was made before we ever made these connections.
Yeah.
Because of that's what we are. We have been shaped by a mother and a father who wanted to honor God with their relationship, with their love for each other. And our hope is that if this film is successful, it's because people say, man, I want to put my money where my mouth is in yeah. the belief of family mm-hmm. and who we can be. So
yeah, it's about moms, like you said. Mm-hmm. It's about the power of family. That's why we're so proud to be here with you. Mm. I told you off air, I literally had someone over at Compassion International just across the way earlier today say, you have to play this at Focus
you
on the Family. This
focus.
Is like a match made
it's
in heaven.
It's the most Focus on the Family movie
yeah,
ever.
and we were like, well, we're going there later today. But it's also about community.
Yeah.
It's also about local
the
local church.
Yeah.
It's also about migration. But look, there were miracles in front of the camera like you saw. There were so many miracles behind the camera. One of them being Lionsgate, who I mentioned, is a distributor.
Yeah.
And they picked the date April 26th.
Yes.
Just before Mother's
April
Day.
April 26th.
April 26th.
If there's any question about when it comes out, it's April 26th.
April 26th.
It's April 26th.
But here's another way to remember it. About a week after they told us, we called Mum and we said, hey, they've announced the date for the release, it's April 26th. And she said, oh, you know, that's our 49th wedding anniversary,
oh,
right?
Oh, wow. You had no idea?
No, I responded,
you
yes.
Cool.
Absolutely.
We planned that, Mom.
That's
absolutely,
we did.
Mother.
But Adam, I did the math and it's because, you know, films release on Fridays.
Right.
And Fridays only happen on the 26th of April every 7 years.
Wow.
So it's a 1 in 2,555 chance.
That's awesome.
That would happen. And so, man, we've just seen miracle after miracle, and we feel really honored to sort of steward this story, to the world, again, both behind the camera and in front of the camera. And our charge and challenge is, if you believe in this and if you're, I think you'll be entertained by it, but come out, give us a go. Let's see if we can prove ourselves. We've proved ourselves as musicians. Let's see if we can prove ourselves as movie makers.
Wow, I love it. And I deeply, deeply enjoyed and was moved by the movie. And April 26th, get your tickets now. Go see it. Support this movie because, you know, we often say as Christians, why can't Hollywood make good movies anymore? When you buy a ticket for a movie, you're casting a vote and you're telling Hollywood, more of this, please. So go see it.
I've dubbed April 26th Family Day, by the way.
Family Day.
You've got Mother's Day. You've got Father's Day.
I like it.
We need a family day.
I like it.
I would have thought Focus on the Family could really make a go
at this. Yeah, let's do it. I not only have I dubbed it Family Day, I've dubbed it Focus on the Family
Day.
Family Day.
I like it.
I'll leave you with a quote. A friend of mine sent this to me the other day. They said, speaking of focusing on the family, they said, a family can survive without a nation, but a nation can't survive without a family.
Mm. Amen.
And now it is time to play a little game. The game today, name that movie. So, just to refresh your memory, name that movie is about picking a movie and give it a witty descriptor, a one-sentence descriptor to the rest of the team. And bring a couple of extra hints just in case we don't get it right away. The rest of us will try to guess the movie. And the theme for today's name that movie, a movie that makes future technology either look fantastic or really terrible. Jonathan, I choose you.
All right, here we go. Here's my little one sentence descriptor. Ready?
I'm ready.
Love brews between an unlikely couple via the anonymity of a new digital platform that's all the rage.
Oh my.
Mm.
You've Got Mail?
Oh, that's a good guess.
Yes, that's it. This new, brand new digital platform that's all the rage. You've Got Mail.
It's my favorite. Good job, Emily. You're carrying the crown for us all.
Good job.
I know.
Wow, that was excellent.
That's right.
That was very good. That was very good.
Nora Ephron film, by the way. There you go.
Nora Ephron. All right, so Emily.
I feel like I need to read some of her books.
Your reward is to go next.
Okay. TV comes to life in this story about a cast who is mistaken for a real Starship crew.
Oh.
You know it.
I know it.
It's on the tip of your tongue.
Galaxy Quest.
Yes.
I've never seen that.
Okay. Oh, it is so good.
Oh, just
it has some plugged-in problems.
It's got Alan Rickman in it. You have to watch
it. It's got everybody in it.
Okay. Sigourney Weaver.
Tim Allen.
Tim Allen. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
fun.
It's pretty great.
It's amazing. It's so meta as well, and I just
it's very intelligent.
It makes my little nerd heart just warm and happy.
That's always a good feeling.
Nerd heart. All right, Kristen.
Okay. A young woman seizes the opportunity of a lifetime when she lands a job with the world's most powerful technology company, but she uncovers some dark, dark secrets.
The Circle.
That's right.
Oh my goodness, Emily. You are on fire.
I am so impressed.
What is with me?
Wow, that sunrise lamp is really working.
I mean, truly.
That's good.
Truly, I'm more awake than I normally am.
That's got to be it. You're going to get Paul's quickly then.
Let's hear it,
Paul.
You're
going to
get
I
this
don't.
Super quickly. This is the most easiest one. Here we go. Technology is great, but it can't hold a candle to gliding teddy bears with rocks.
What are you talking about?
No, it is Star Wars. Wait a second.
And the movie is?
Return of the Jedi.
There you go.
Yeah. So Ewoks.
The Endor, the Ewok.
Your brain.
round
was like
of
gliding.
Applause.
Wait, what's gliding
I was gonna
though?
Do a little dance.
Don't you remember they were on their little gliders and then they would drop
they would rocks
on the rocks
on the stormtroopers.
On the big old chicken like things.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
I thought it was like Ted. Like, that's about a teddy bear.
Well, like
we've been talking about that movie.
You said teddy bear, and I hesitated because I was like, wait,
Yeah, okay. I thought.
And also, I really didn't think it was Star Wars.
Well, you would think. Like, you would think. You would think. I don't know. I get in this chair and I just start channeling Adam.
Okay,
I
so guess. Whoever sits in the host chair just their brain is 24/7 Star Wars.
It's just Star Wars, The Matrix, all the time.
Oh, man.
Well done. Well done.
And you know what? Just for fun, we have a YouTube video of. It was Star Wars trivia between Kristen and who knows nothing,
goodness.
And Adam, who knows everything.
Please
let me just say, it's hilarious.
It is hilarious. That's one of my favorite things we've ever done on YouTube. All right. So, Emily, congratulations. You clearly
Seriously?
Won this game.
Way to go. Yeah.
Your prize, nothing. I'd love to give you
a copy of a new book.
Yeah. Respect.
I honor. I already have a copy of Becoming a Screen Savvy Family.
Yeah.
You should go pick up yours today.
You should.
Right now.
You should. And you know, there is so in demand that my copy disappeared right off my desk.
Are you serious?
So honestly, if you send us a gift of any amount, we will send you a copy of our shiny, brand new, helpful book written by all of us. One so precious that it is clearly in demand even in the plugged-in offices. So if you want to know how you can actually go about doing that, giving us a gift of any amount, check it out on our homepage and we'll tell you all about it. Guys, thanks so much. This was a really fun conversation.
Yeah, it was.
And I want to thank you, the listener, for spending time with us today, too. This is one of the highlights of what technology can do, you know? I love it when technology brings us together, and it brought us together, us little plugged-in-erites, into this very room. It allowed us to talk with Jonathan way out in California, and it allows us to bring in listeners from all around the world, which I love. So, if you would, use technology to chime in on the conversation yourself. Why don't you share your thoughts on Facebook, Instagram, or leaving a voice message on the Plugged In Show homepage? That's right, a voice message. Tell us about your favorite tech-centric movie or what bit of technology you love or you hate or a little bit of both. And tell us about the unsung heroes in your own life. And then connect with us again next week on the Plugged In Show.
Your kids are unique, and so are you. You have your strengths as a parent, and areas of growth, too. Find out what they are by taking the 7 Traits of Effective Parenting Assessment from Focus on the Family. Find out how you're doing on traits like gratitude, grace, and other research-backed traits. When you're done, we'll give you a detailed PDF with several pages of content on how to use your unique strengths and how to work on your areas of growth. This simple framework shows you how to be an effective mom or dad in daily family life, a parent who recognizes your imperfections and finds ways to thrive. You'll also get access to other resources from Focus on the Family to help you keep growing into the best parent for your kids. It only takes a few minutes to boost your parenting. Take the 7 Traits of Effective Parenting Assessment at parentingtraits.com. That's parentingtraits.com.